You are listening to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. Welcome to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm, where we talk to authors about a book that stuck with them through the years, for good reasons and sometimes for less than good reasons. My name is Chris, your host. You've probably heard my voice before. I'm also known as C.M. Lowry, he, him, and I love reading and writing sci-fi, fiction, poetry, roleplay games, whatever. You can find out more about me on the internet in various places, including allaboutchris.org. But we're never really here to talk about me. And this is the moment that we welcome Flora Chin to the show, writer of South of the Yangtze. How did I do it pronouncing those two Mandarin words?
Brilliant. Thanks, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, Flora.
So I was born and raised in Shanghai, and I moved around a lot since my early 20s. I moved to Hong Kong. I lived in Hong Kong for over a decade. And a year ago, my family relocated to New York City. So I'm based in the US now.
Interesting. I'm really interested in Hong Kong, and I could totally derail the whole of this podcast by just talking about why you left and that journey, but we're not going to do that. Maybe we might touch on it later. We'll see. Why are you here today?
Well, that's this book I read.
So what book have you brought for us today?
I have brought a novel called Little Reunions by the Chinese-American writer Eileen Zhang. So she lived from 1920 to 1995, and she is probably the most influential woman writer in the Chinese language in the 20th century. Little Reunions is her final novel and a very autobiographical one, and it is now available in English since 2018.
Yeah, so I mean, it was published posthumously, wasn't it, after she died?
Right. Yeah, I think this novel is very interesting first because of that, you know, the controversy it has created around its publication. So Little Reunion was completed in 1976, but it was first published in Taiwan and Hong Kong in 2009. And by then, Eileen Zhang had already passed on for over a decade. She doesn't have any close family or children. So in 1995, she died alone in her apartment in Los Angeles. So her best friends, a couple lived in Hong Kong at the time, inherited her literary estate. And they decided not to publish Little Reunions. In fact, they were the ones who discouraged Eileen Zhang to submit the novel in the first place back in the 1970s, and they convinced her. So in Eileen Zhang's will, she specifically wrote down the line that Little Reunions needs to be destroyed. But later, when both of her friends, the couple in Hong Kong, passed away, their only son became the executor of her literary estate, and he decided to publish the novel.
Wow, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? That, I mean, just the idea of, you know, because you want to, obviously, I mean, in a way, we shouldn't be reading it because the author's express request was that it be destroyed. But
right.
I also, you know, I'm a big fan of Terry Pratchett, and I'm personally sad that the Terry Pratchett kind of literary journey ended. I always hoped that Terry Pratchett would actually open it up to other authors to write things in there. So that is interesting. I actually have a question for you. In England, I would say the most famous female Chinese writer is probably, and again, I'm not going to do well on this name, Jung Chang, the writer of Wild Swans.
Right.
Is that as big a book in sort of America and the rest of like the Chinese speaking world as it was here?
Well, I think she is more famous in the English-speaking world because she wrote in English, and her books are banned in China.
Okay.
So, Wild Swans, the stories about three generations of women, in China, and also she wrote the Mao, the unknown story. So you can imagine it's definitely banned.
Yeah.
But she is younger, so she spent her youth during the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s. Eileen Zhang was born in
Yeah,
1920s.
before
Yeah,
that.
so before that, Eileen Zhang is definitely a bigger name in the Chinese language speaking world.
And did and has so that was produced in 2009, and as in it was printed, and it was printed in Hong Kong.
Yeah, Hong Kong, Taiwan. I think it was released in mainland China at the same time.
And that hasn't had any issues of being banned or kind of limited in any way.
No, because this story is very autobiographical. It's a very personal story. So Eileen Zhang actually wrote two very political novels, one called The Rice Sprout Song and the other called The Naked Earth. And
Yeah.
those were very anti-communist in themes. But the rest of her stories are actually not very political at all. So, about the publication of this book. So the son of Eileen Zhang's best friend, when he decided to publish the novel, he, alongside with the novel itself, he also published the letter communications between Eileen Zhang and his parents, which shows that the author herself was initially excited about the completion of the novel, but her friends listed some of the political risks at the time in Taiwan and the potential damages to her personal image. You know, once the details of her relationships were revealed to the reading public. So the son, in his defense, he said that the factors his parents were concerned about in the 1970s were no longer valid, and this beautifully crafted novel deserves its audience.
I mean, that's a I don't necessarily disagree with that. It's just really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, do you have a quote from the novel for us?
Yes. So this quote is from a scene when Rachel, the protagonist's mother, was talking to her former sister-in-law. There's a lot of people, a lot of characters in this book. So here it goes. When visitors came, Rachel would often joke with Judy, "Our little Julie is all right. She calls me second aunt. But heaven forbid if little Julian bursts in and bursts out, 'Mommy, mommy,' that would be something." Actually, Julian never once referred to Rachel as his mother. He had always envied Julie being asked to call their mother second aunt. Julie, however, devoted little time to revisiting the past, and so such thoughts about her family were fleeting. Memories, happy or not, always embodied a doleful note, which, no matter how faint, Julie felt a strong aversion to. She never sought out melancholy, but life unavoidably overflowed with it. Just thinking along these lines made her feel like she was standing in the portal of an ancient edifice, peering through the moonlight and dark shadows that permeated the ruins of a once noble and illustrious household, which was now nothing more than scattered shards of roof tiles and piles of rubble from collapsed walls. That instant of knowing what once existed there.
Nice. Yeah, there was a line there that was, I really, was it? She never sought out melancholy, but life unavoidably overflowed with it. Yeah, that's, and so there's, so it's a autobiographical novel then. Is it completely that, or is it fictionalized as well?
It's quite Autobiographical. Actually, I think at the time, Eileen Jones' friends in Hong Kong called it a very thinly veiled
Okay.
autobiographical story. So, the protagonist, Julie, her upbringing very much resembles Eileen Jones' own childhood. She was born to a large, prominent family who used to be aristocrats in Qing Dynasty. However, in her generation in the 1920s, Shanghai, her father wasted the family money away by being an opium addict. And her mother was the last generation of women in China who had bon feet in her childhood, but also the first generation of women who studied in Europe and lived a westernized life after divorcing Julie's father. So, for example, despite her bon feet, Rachel, Julie's mother, became a good swimmer and a skier. Which says a little about what kind of journey she had, right? So Julie, this main character, she grew up between the tug of war of the old world and the new, and between the East and the West. And her mother was always traveling and disappearing, only coming back to Julie every 4 or 5 years with a period of little reunions, hence the title of the novel. And her father, surrounded by opium and prostitute, once locked Julie up for half a year because Julie went to see her mother. So there's a lot of childhood trauma in this book, and Julie grew up to become a very sensitive young woman. And she went to Hong Kong for university, but her study was cut short by the beginning of the Second World War, and Hong Kong fell into the hand of the Japanese. So in the novel, there are many firsthand incidences of what life was like in Hong Kong during the air bombs and later, the Japanese occupation.
Yeah.
And Julie then returned to Shanghai and started living with her aunt, a single educated Korean woman, Judy. And she published her short stories and essays, which led to literary stardom. However, her success as a writer attracted both good and bad attention. They always do.
Yeah.
An older man who was a trader and worked for the Japanese puppet regime at the time visited Julie as an enthusiastic reader of her stories. So they started a relationship while the man still kept two other wives and later a string of girlfriends. And just like Julie's relationship with her mother, so her love affair with this character, Zhi Yong, is also marked by many separations and little reunions in between.
I mean, there's probably a few red flags in that relationship. Generally,
Right.
the other wives and girlfriends is probably a little bit of a that's fascinating. The bound feet and then getting into skiing. I'm
Right.
not I've never been skiing, but when I've been ice skating, I've actually found it really hurt my feet because you have to have them so tightly bound. So maybe it's some predisposed usefulness there. What's your favorite thing about the novel? Why have you brought it today?
I think the story covers a period of China in the 20th century that bears enormous political changes, right? It started at the end of Qing Dynasty, and then the start of the Republic from 1912, and then the Second World War, and then Civil War, and then the overtake of the communists. So I think that history is fascinating.
And well,
And
and the Japanese occupying Hong Kong, which I've
right.
only learnt about now,
So the protagonist, Julie, actually went back to Shanghai. She lived in the concessions, the British and French concessions. And that turned out to be the safest place to be during the war. I think it is, there's a lot of political backdrop, but the novel, to me, it doesn't promote a single political opinion. So Eileen Zhang, as I mentioned before, has other political novels. But Little Reunions is deeply personal and about how individuals fare in war times and when government regimes change multiple times in one's life. For example, her Japanese and German characters living in Shanghai during the Second World War, were no better or worse than any of the other characters. So, you know, they had affairs, they do good and bad deeds. In other words, she doesn't put anybody in a box.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what essentially literary fiction needs to be. I specifically liked a novel form in today's age because it doesn't just offer a glimpse of people's lives, but a longer story about how people get to where they are. So Eileen Zhang famously said, you know, if you know the past me, you will forgive today's me. It doesn't sound so smart in English, but it's really well said in Chinese.
I mean, it sounds, I think I like that. I do a lot of in my personal life, I do I work on some deprived estates, and you see a lot of people making very poor decisions, becoming poor parents, you know, sort of things like that. But absolutely past me is, you know, is we should it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you should judge, you need to have grace for people on the past me, but also if current me is still being horrible, like they're still horrible, like as in, so it's an interesting balance. I like that. So what you said, it sounds beautiful in Chinese. Say it in Chinese for us.
如果你知道过去的我，你会原谅今天的我。
Nice. It sounded beautiful to me, but I can't
Thank
comment on
you.
the meaning of it. Okay, so that's some of the bits that you enjoy about it. Is there anything challenging about the novel or anything that actually you maybe don't like as much?
I think strangely, what I don't like about this novel is also in some way the most unforgettable highlights of the novel. You know, things that linger in my mind the longest, if that makes sense. So the protagonist, Julie, to me is a very flawed character. But she is also very original. So the two central figures in this book are Julie's mother, Rachel, and Julie's lover or semi-husband, Zhi Yong. We never know if they're really legally married. So both relationships were explored in great details, you know, dialogues and a lot of small actions. So with the mother, it will appear to the reader that Julie is very cold and even revengeful towards her. She wouldn't even visit while Rachel was dying abroad and only sent her a check. Towards the end of the story, she tried to give Rachel money to pay her debt off in terms of inconveniencing Rachel all these years by being her child. And you can imagine her attitude broke Rachel's heart.
Yeah.
Also, when Julie learned that her mother might have slept with their German doctor in the book in order to seek his help for Julie's illness, she didn't appear to feel grateful. She said, "Sometimes knowledge comes too late. Her feelings have used up." However, I think you can tell by how much Julie remembers all the details when she interacts with her mother and how beautifully she portrays her. There was a lot of love at heart, yet the narrator only claims the disappointment. So I always wondered if Eileen Zhang ever had a therapist and what would her work be, you know, if she had one. I think writing is therapeutic, but writing is not therapy. And Julie is such a deeply wounded child at heart. And I sometimes wish that the narrative could have walked a few more steps in terms of character development for us. You know, with all these new gained knowledge for her mother, of her mother, and the history behind her decisions, could there be more empathy for her from Julie? You know, it is not easy for her mother to be the pioneer of her generation, a bondfoot woman leaving marriage behind and seeking for herself all over the world, right? With not much income at all. Only the suitcases filled with antique to sell from her once prominent family. So there is a scene in the book I think always sticks with me. After the war ended, Julie's mother went to India and then Southeast Asia, and haven't they never met again. And the only thing the mother left Julie was a pair of earrings. And Julie doesn't have pierced ears. So, in a very cool manner, she decides to just sell them right away. And after she sold them, there is a conversation between her and her aunt. And her aunt commented that, well, you have sold this pair of earrings in a good price. And Julie replied, yes, I did, because the sellers knew that I don't really want to sell. They always know. So I think, that this is such a moving scene to me. It portrays her emotions and her denial in such a profound way.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a sort of really practical reason of like, well, I suppose I don't really need these because my ears aren't pierced, but actually, like, you could pierce your ears, you could keep the only memento you have of your mother, even though you don't have pierced ears, like, as in, and like you say, it kind of points to some unhealed wounds sort of underneath the surface, and like that there, like, and then like you say, it is really interesting because as a narrator, she is commenting on her own, like, well, actually, I didn't really want to sell them, you know. So she's having the self understanding to comment on that there, but not the self understanding to just not sell the earrings in the first place. And Julia is Eileen. Thinly veiled. Is that what is that the
And then, there's a lot of denial in this book. So the other central character in the novel, Zhi Yong, the man Julie is in a relationship with, has taken up much of the later part of the story. But detail after detail and dialogue after dialogue, we can just see what a horrible man he was from beginning to the end. How he would sometimes use casual remarks to hurt Julie's confidence, and how he brags about his so-called conquests of women. And even their physical relationship was quite telling. So I think Eileen Zhang didn't pass judgment of him on the page as an author. So she has too much class to do that. But from how she selects the details, and readers can tell how little respect she had for this character. Yet a reader would feel really sorry for the protagonist, Julie, who in her actions, despite her doubts about this man, keeps herself available for him. Of course, I think the heart of the matter is very complex, and it's the beauty of this book, the bitter and sweet, the back and forth. I guess a certain dangerous attraction, even though you don't really approve of a person's character. But I think what would unsettle a reader now, especially a female reader today, is the deeply rooted but not enough scrutinized bias on gender roles in a patriarchal society. For example, how forgiving Julie is about Zhi Yong's infidelity as she normalizes it and tries to convince herself, even after all these years, as you mentioned, even after this authorial distance, right? She's still sort of in denial, and I think that denial of the author is shown through the narrator. So in that regard, I often wondered, I often wish actually, Eileen Zhang could write this novel in first person instead of third person, so that we can get closer to the heart of the narrator a little more, because behind that cool, very cool manner and the distance of the third person narrative, there's a lot of storm brewing underneath, and a lot of anger, masked just simply as despair. And I think, as a female reader, I don't want her to simply brush it off.
I think I can probably share your feeling as a male reader as well, that I would like, and it's one of the great poetic beauties of a posthumous novel, like, as in, there can never be any more comment on it, you know, like, as in, like, we can never hear, and actually, it's really interesting that we've got the detail of those letters back and forth, like, as in, I do they reveal anything of her emotions towards the novel rather than just her kind of feelings that she's written something good?
Well, I don't think she told too much. I think she was very immersed in this novel. She wrote it very quickly. Yeah, I think she was excited about it, but you could read from the communication that the friends, so they worried about when the novel was published, the character that Zhi Yong was based on, so he was still alive. He lived in Taiwan, and they were worried that he's going to use those details, to gain some publicity for himself. So her friends were trying to protect Eileen Zhong from that as well.
Yeah, so which is interesting because what we're saying is he's not a very nice character and probably thus real life person. And then the real life letters about the semi-fictionalized novel talk about how this is a bad person who might. Oh, there's layers there, aren't there? That's really fascinating. Brilliant. I have to say, obviously, I do a lot of these podcasts, and I can't read every novel that comes along. But I'm drawn in by the. I think the com you know the political context as well. Like I think that's very interesting. Are there any other books that you would recommend? Like little reunions.
I would say Fall of the Pagoda and The Book of Change. So these two books are connected. They're essentially the first drafts of Little Reunions. They are also longer and they're written in English by Eileen Zhong. So I wonder if there are any practical concerns when she wrote Little Reunions. I feel that some of the scenes were, rushed through, by making this book much shorter, and therefore probably more commercial, because Fall of the Pagoda and The Book of Change, they couldn't find a publisher when Eileen Zhong completed them in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And these two books have more details about her childhood and her university days during wartime Hong Kong, which, an English reader at the time may care less about. So there is this difficulty. But I find, in these two books, there's are many moving scenes between, for example, between the protagonist and her childhood nanny, with whom the protagonist has the most attachment with. I think I enjoyed them both very much. I also think Eileen Zhong's short fiction is fantastic. So there is a collection of stories called Love in a Fallen City. So this book is composed of her most celebrated works written in the 1940s, when she was not even 30 years old. For a reader who is not familiar with her work, I would recommend reading Love in a Fallen City first. It's also been translated into English in recent years.
Yeah, like I would definitely need that. My Chinese definitely not quite there yet. How about other authors? And anything else in this sphere, or completely different from this sphere, but kind of ringing similar emotional bells?
I would say she is an author in her own league. I cannot actually think of anybody who, in the 20th century would live up to her in my mind.
I mean, that's amazing. Like, as in, we ask that question very often, and I've never had anyone say she's just on a pedestal above everyone else. So I'm happy with that. That's great. Like, I like that. So we're nearly done talking about Little Reunions. I just if people haven't caught it yet, what's just like give us one final reason why should someone? There's a billion books out there. Why should someone read this book?
Well, I think, two reasons. One, as I mentioned before, is about a story about China during this very interesting time, and especially with an emphasis on the Republic era, after the New Culture Movement in 1990, 1919, there was the introduction of science and democracy. Culture was really flourishing. During this very short period between the dynasties and the communists. So it's a very significant period to read about. And I also think it's simply a good story, you know, about a woman finding her place in the world, about understanding one's parents and family history. So there is a lot of universal themes there.
No, that does sound fascinating. And again, I think as a person in the in England, in the West, we are poorly educated about much of the rest of the world's history. You know, I think if you ask most English people, it would have gone straight from the dynasties to the communist revolution, as in like as in I think so. Yeah, fascinating. Okay, brilliant. We have talked about that. Now I would like to talk a little bit more about you, Flora, if that's all right.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit more about how did you become a writer?
Well, I have always enjoyed reading and writing as a child. But I started my career actually first as a journalist and then a little bit in the publishing industry. But then after I moved to Hong Kong, I worked in the financial industry for quite a while. But then about 10 years ago, I started writing more seriously. I got my MFA in the US. And then after I moved back to Hong Kong for the second time, I started working on this novel. And, you know, all these things I have practiced before, short stories, they somehow all came together into this story.
Excellent. And then the story being south of the Yangtze.
Right. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So this is a story. It's a coming of age story about a young woman growing up in China from the 1980s to the early 2000s.
Is it a thinly veiled
It's
autobiographical?
not that thinly veiled, right? It's definitely. I took a lot of material from my own upbringing. I grew up in the 1980s as well. And you know, this is also a fascinating time. China has just recovered from the devastating Cultural Revolution, right? And it shifted from planned economy to market economy. And also, you know, there's a lot of political backstory in my novel as well. 1989, the Tiananmen Square massacre. And later, 2003, the SARS epidemic. And I also mentioned a little bit about the beginning of Hong Kong protests in 2010. But it's also a story about family, about relationships, about language, how someone chooses to use English as a different kind of tool to just broaden the boundary of her thinking. And it is also a book about migration, you know, what to gain and what to lose.
Does the lead character move from China to America to Hong Kong to America to Hong Kong?
Well, the main character, I only traced her from childhood to her early 20s. So
Okay.
yeah, she moved from China, Shanghai. The story is set in Shanghai to the US. Not to Hong Kong, but my personal journey is China to Hong Kong to the US. It's actually I would say the geographical trajectory is actually exactly the same as Eileen Cheung.
Yeah.
So that's also why I enjoyed her so much.
Did you feel a sense of, because it's a very well-known book, the Eileen Cheung's, did you feel a sense of, I don't know, that people would obviously connect the dots and say this is similar? Did you think they might say it was too similar, or more of a kind of a nod to it?
Well, it's different, 'cause we are definitely from different generations. I was writing about the post-Cultural Revolution China.
I mean,
You know, I was also
we talked about video at the beginning, so our listeners can't see you on video, but you definitely don't look like you were born in 1926, like so.
Right. Yeah, so I belong to this also one of a kind only child generation. You know,
Yeah.
The mandate started in 1979 and lasted all the way to 2015. So in my novel, I wrote a lot about being an only child in China. So the huge expectations we had from our parents and, the loneliness we had without many peers in our lives. And I think I wanted to contribute to that part of the discussion.
Yeah, I think for those of us who grew up with siblings and they were annoying, but yeah, it's interesting in British culture, you can often identify only children. And so just there's something about them. I think especially in our kind of teenage years, I think, we as we grow older and we kind of become a bit more well-rounded, and if we get married or partnered, you kind of learn some of those things, don't you? But I think it would have been interesting being in an entire generation of. I mean, I'm ultimately, without passing judgment on it, it's sort of not natural, is it? In terms of naturally, people tend to have children like when they're in loving relationships, and so it's a forced change to a rhythm of life, isn't it?
And nowadays China encourage you having at least three children, right?
Okay,
And then you flipped.
a big change, yeah. Brilliant. So, where can we get hold of your book?
Cells of the Yangtze is available on Amazon, both in paperback and Kindle versions. And I know your listeners, if they're from Hong Kong, they can also order it through the Chinese University of Hong Kong Press, which is the distributor of my publisher. It will probably get you there faster, but elsewhere in the world, Amazon is the best bet.
Yeah, and I think we may end up stocking it ourselves at Beyond Cataclysm as well. Those of you who don't know, we stock a range of fiction as well as our role play games. So do check that out. Where can we find out? Do you have anything more on the boil? What's next for you, Flora?
I am starting to thinking about my next project. I have a 3-year-old daughter who is just going to school this semester, so I have a little bit more mental energy these days.
Uh, the
And
the day
I
the day when you suddenly don't have we've got three kids, so the Chinese government would be very happy with us, but we have three kids, and I remember when the last one went to school and we went, whoa, there's this time from like 8 o'clock in the morning until three that's just empty, and that was a wonderful few months, and now it's horribly full again. So yeah, well.
I think there's a lot to unpack about new parenthood. I think motherhood would be a theme in my next project, and I'm also very interested in Chinese folk tales. I want to revisit some of the early stories. I was rereading this English author, Angela Carter's The Bloody Chamber. I love this book. She is rewriting some of the classics like Bluebeard, Beauty and Beast from a female perspective, first person. And I wanted to revisit some Chinese folk tales as well. I'm starting to introduce them to my daughter. So I hope that this aspect will find a way into my next project as well.
That sounds fascinating. So there we go. This has been a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. If you have enjoyed this, please hunt us out on a podcasting platform and give us 5 stars because it will help us. Also, if you have listened to this podcast and enjoyed it, please go on social media and share it. We're quite good at making things, and we're not very good at promoting it as a company. And so it would be great if you could fill in for all of our inadequacies. You can find us at most of the UK fiction conventions as well as gaming conventions. So we try and go to FantasyCon and the British Sci-Fi Convention each year. And so, yes. hunt us out and buy books and do all of those sort of things. Our aim for 2025 is to manage to really get out there a little bit more so that people know who we are, and so that we can in turn support excellent authors like Flora and the many other people that we've interviewed
Gotcha.
on the podcast. Flora, do you have anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Sure. I do have a website. If you want to check it out, it's florachan.com, Flora, Qian.com. And I'm also on Goodreads. So feel free to follow me or add me as a friend. And if you enjoy my book, feel free to leave a review. And as social media is concerned, I use Instagram.
Nice. Yes, and we use Beyond Cat at Beyond Cataclysm on all of the social medias, particularly Blue Sky at the moment, I would say, is
Okay.
where we're mostly inhabiting. So yes, you have just listened to This Book I Read, hosted by me, CM Lowry, and starring Flora Chin. Thank you for listening. Find out more about us, our podcasts, and opportunities for submissions to our projects and much more at beyondcataclysm.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.